Session number 12241, Mr. William Laverick, reel 16.
Mr. Laverick, reel 16. Now, you'd moved back into Gosforth.
We'd moved back into Gosforth, where I belonged, and went into rooms, and I'd went to the council and seen about a house, told them that I was war vet, and war vets were supposed to be provided with housing. That the council was supposed to provide the housing.
Did that work?
It worked. It worked. He told me, yes, he says, you'll have to go on the list. I told him, I've got one child. Oh, he said, well, that's further points for you to get a house as quickly as possible. He looked through the books and he turned around and he told me, he says, you know, he says, you're fortunate. He says, we're going to start a new lot, he says, of houses. He said, but they won't be permanent, they'll be temporary houses, temporary housing. He said, well, we have the estate, we have the land, and he says, we're going to prepare it now. He said, are you working? I said, I haven't got a job yet. Right, he says, we can set you on this estate. He says, you can actually start on this estate. So I started work for the council, actually on the estate where I was going to live, and I actually was there when the house was put on the site. I had put the foundations and the foundations and things in.
So you felt reasonably happy with the council?
That's right. Until then, I felt reasonably happy with the council. Now, during this time, I got the job. I went up and joined the union. It was headquarters within the Grove at Gosforth. And came down. I had a chap of the union bloke up there, strong Labour man. And he told me, this is the World's End constituency. Gosforth was in the World's End constituency. He said, but unfortunately, he says, you haven't got a Labour Party in Gosforth. And I said, well, there must be a Labour Party in Gosforth. I says, there's Labour councillors. I says, we had two Labour councillors in Gosforth. I had already seen them about the housing when I first went back. I said, we have two Labour councillors in Gosforth. We must have a Labour Party. So I went back and made inquiries. And I found that they didn't have a Labour Party in Gosforth. They had a small section in Cox Lodge run by the women, but they had no men. Just the women, Labour Party.
You'd been Secretary of South Gosforth before the war.
Before the war, I'd only been a ward secretary, South Gosforth. But this time, there was no one, except for the Cox Lodge. So I went immediately to Cox Lodge and saw the women and told them that I was going to start up the Labour Party in Gosforth. And they were just meeting in the houses. Could they give me some idea of someone that could tell us where I could get the books and things from? Oh, yes, they said there used to be the Labour Party. And Joe Watson, who is the agent for the Member of Parliament, he has the books. So I went down to World's End and got the books from Joe Watson, the books that they had previously, and told them we were going to start up the Labour Party again in Gosforth. And I went and saw the councillors and arranged a meeting at the adult school. We hired the adult school for the meeting. And notified, at the time, one of the councillors had brought out a free paper, and I notified them that we were going to reform the Labour Party and we're meeting in the council, in the adult school, and anyone interested could come along, you see. And we got sufficient along there for to start and form the Labour Party in Gosforth. Now, we had two Labour councillors that didn't even put in an appearance at the meeting, and yet they were both Labour councillors. So I wrote letters to them. One came down at the next meeting that we had. From then on, we had all meetings at the adult school. So we got the people that lived in the different areas. I got a ward secretary for each area. And then I thought, communist days, we used to have even smaller. We used to have the cells smaller than that. And what I got each ward secretary to try and get the name of someone in each street that would become a member of the Labour Party and try to recruit members for the Labour Party. And they'd done this in each ward, and we got a reasonable Labour Party started. And then we went on well till the election, next election.
What, 51?
51 election. And the 51 election, we had a very good candidate, John McKay. Now, I had met him two or three times during the time I was with the party, because being secretary of the Gosforth Party also put me on the management committee of the constituency party. And I used to go to the management committee meetings. And I met John McKay, and he turned around and told me that they were going to have a body of four speakers during the election to go around the halls, and would I take up and speak on the platform for them, take the place of the first speaker before the main speaker was brought on. So I got on the panel with John, and I took foreign policy. I had well up with the British way and purpose, the APGAR and such like, well up with the breakup of the empire and all this, that and the other, because there were pamphlets in there. So I took foreign policy for him, and we went right through the constituency, different areas, and I got known through being on the platform with John McKay. And we had meetings in Gosford, and I very much surprised there again, because I had a chap came to me after one of the meetings and said that he would like a debate on foreign policy at the Conservative, on the Conservative platform. And I says, you're welcome to it on any platform. I said, not only this platform. I said, I'll come along to the Conservative platform and debate foreign policy with you there. But it didn't come off because they cancelled the debate. He wrote and told me that the debate wasn't going to be held.
How about the career issue? That must have been in the air.
The career issue was in the air, and we very much objected to a continuation of the war, of a war as we saw it. We had enough of the war and whatnot. And we had people being sent to Korea. We actually had the British troops and such like being sent to Korea. And we started an anti-Korea movement, actually, in Newcastle. Bring the troops back. We started bring the troops back movement, get them out of Korea.
What did you do?
We had meetings and handbills, and probably went to handed out handbills and such like, the same as we normally done with the when you were as a Communist Party and you had any subject you wanted to do, all handbills.
Was it a Labour Party thing or was it a front organisation?
It was a front organisation.
Was the Labour Party involved?
Labour Party
in it?
Involved with it. We were involved with it. The Labour Party were involved with it.
Were most Labour Party members against Korea then?
All that I spoke to, but you see, the majority of Labour Party members then were older people. It wasn't the younger people. This was the group that we formed. We formed the Young Socialist Group after the Labour Party was formed, after we got the Labour Party and got money in hand and whatnot. And then we formed the Young Socialist Group, and we used to have them at the adult school and take them through the various Labour pamphlets and such like, and what we were fighting for, and brought them along on the Young Socialist lines.
So how did the people of Newcastle react to your anti-Korean war group?
Well, there was no real opposition. There was no real opposition. The only people that you ever came in opposition with was peculiarly the National Front.
No real opposition to you, you mean?
No real opposition to me.
So there was plenty of opposition to the war?
To the war, there was. Plenty of opposition to the war, yes. But we didn't find any real opposition. We found no real opposition. Just the odd ones that, you know, the...
So were your meetings successful?
Well, we didn't have any big meetings. It was nearly all street work. And then they had one meeting, I believe, at the... who was it? Had a meeting. It wasn't through the Labour Party, though. But we attended. We attended the meeting. And it faded out, actually. It just faded out because... It never really took a hold, the opposition to the, not in Newcastle it didn't, but throughout the country I believe there was some bigger opposition than what we had tried to bring about. But we'd got pamphlets out and such like and done a certain amount of work on that line.
So although there wasn't much objection, although people broadly agreed with you, it wasn't a movement that really caught on in Newcastle.
Didn't catch on at all in the
this
area.
People were sort of vaguely in favour of what you were saying, but that's right. No one was much prepared to do
it. They weren't in favour of a continuation of the Vietnam trouble at all, the Korean War at all.
What about later on at the Suez thing?
This is when I wakened up. On the morning of the Suez, it was in the July, I remember very, very well, it was in the July, and I wakened up and switched the wireless on, And the first thing I heard was that the planes had been sent and the war had actually started. We hadn't been told it was going to start or anything. It had just started. It was the most secret war I'd ever heard about, but I was angry. I was really angry.
Why?
Because the Suez Canal, to me, it wasn't ours. We knew it was a way through from one sea into another sea that saved thousands of miles and cut the cost of materials down. But it wasn't our canal. It was the Egyptian. As far as I was concerned, the canal had nothing to do with us. And therefore, we had no reason to go and fight for it. Something that didn't belong to us, we shouldn't be going in to fight for. And, of course, we knew then we didn't know that there'd been a conspiracy at all between Israel, France, and Britain. We didn't know then, you see. All we knew is that we had sent planes, we went to war, we'd gone to war. And I was really angry, and I remember I was now working as a school teacher, physical education, and I was at a private school.
This was after your job on the building, estate.
I'd done quite a few jobs on the estate.
But this school job, you had until you retired?
I got by accident, and I had it until I retired. I got the job by accident because another army chap had the job and dropped down dead. He dropped down dead and we were left without a...
And you were the PE
instructor. And this came through the papers. PE teacher wanted to teach swimming, boxing and PE. So I immediately applied and went down and got the job.
What did you do about your anger?
Well, I went down this morning and I went along to the common room. And as I walked into the common room, they all had glasses of wine. And, well done, get shot of the wogs. Get shot of the wogs, we'll drink to that. And this,
oh, which school was this?
The Newcastle Preparatory School. It was owned by
it's all right.
But it was privately owned.
So what did you do when you saw them doing this?
And I immediately lost my head and really went at them. Fortunately for me, I've never been a one that swore in an argument. I never swear in an argument. And I got straight in at them. I says, you people ought to be ashamed of yourselves. I says, just because they're Arabs, I says, you know, I don't suppose ever any of you were in contact with Arabs during the war. We were assisted by certain factions of Arabs in the war. I says, they assisted us greatly. I says, we had headquarters at Cairo in these places. I says, where the Arabs were doing the fighting for us in a lot of areas. I says, and now, I says, just for the sake of one canal, I says, you decide to start, the countries decide to start. I says, you ought to be ashamed of yourself. I says, naked aggression. And the headmaster's wife turned round and said something about, we'll show the dirty works that they can't get away with taking something away from us. And I immediately got at her. And, oh, I give her a dressing down. And I told her, naked aggression. I says, they're not dirty works. I says, they're Egyptians that you send them out. They're not dirty works. I says, think of them as Egyptians. They're humans, the same as you are. And I give her a real dressing down. She started to cry and rushed upstairs out the way. And we didn't see her for the rest of the day. And this, of course, got me to the stage where they weren't speaking to me. I was used to walk across the common room and have my, in the morning, first thing, before we went into assembly, nobody spoke to me. You would go into assembly, and still nobody speaking to me, and I was right out of favour, just because of Suez. I was out of favour. But I'd seen the attitude that this other side had. Every one of them were drinking to the success of the British and the hammer the wog. That was the attitude.
Did you organise politically again? I mean, that's your private life, you actually took a stand, but in the Labour movement? Were you still in the Labour Party?
I was still in the Labour Party. I had lost the secretary's job in the Labour Party. Someone had been considered too left, I think, for the job. Word had got round that I was a communist. They brand me as a communist. It had been years and years and years. It was before the war that I was a communist. But they still branded me as a communist and Trotskyite and all this, that and the other. Well, the Trotskyites hadn't been thought of just then. It was in the 60s before the Trotskyites were, before they were being branded as Trotskyites. But they'd got shut of me because I had been a previous communist, brought a Christian socialist in, the same as Ackland had been a Christian socialist. They brought him in later on. I found out that he'd actually been the secretary of the Heaton Young Conservatives.
So what was done to oppose Suez within the Labour movement, or by you, after?
Well, they immediately started the outcry, and what we done was to immediately say, right, how about letters to the paper? And we started to send letters to the newspapers. Ex-servicemen opposing Suez and such like. And we got round quite a lot, and I had all these letters sent into the newspapers. Then we wrote to the members of Parliament. We wrote to a member of Parliament and asked him to have these put through to the... And we actually... What we'd done was duplicated a letter. We duplicated a letter and handed this out and asked people to put their signatures to it and send it on to the member of Parliament. But it was all the same letter, you see. But it was letting them see that something was being done about it by certain factions. And this is what we'd done up here. We duplicated this letter, had it duplicated and made into a pamphlet, and handed it out for just a person's signature and just posted to the MP.
Did you do any street work?
We'd done a lot of street work when we improved our membership through the Suez. We went through, around the streets, we went through to get opinions. That's all we'd done, went to get opinions on the Suez. And told them we're from the Labour Party, we want their opinion, what did they feel about the Suez, the Suez and this, that and the other. And you see, the peculiar thing was that where we were going around were all the houses, the council houses, that were being built for the ex-soldiers coming back. So of course nearly all of them were opposed to another war being started. So we got a terrific amount of response from this sort of thing, and John Mackay actually said it, that he had a tremendous number of letters and such like from his constituents to put forward through to the minister at that time.
So again, was opinion broadly against it in Newcastle, the Suez adventure?
Very much against it.
More so than Korea?
Amongst the people that I got amongst, it was almost 100% against it. More so than against the... You see, the career was something that we didn't see. We didn't see. It didn't involve us. It only involved certain troops, the career did. It didn't bring civilians in any way back into the services and such like, the same as this was going to do. We knew for a fact that if this war got started and the Arab nations came into support, that we were actually going to be called up again. It was going to be another war. And we were against this. We'd already fought one war. We didn't feel like fighting another. And this was what...
As well as principle.
As well as principle, yes. Oh, yes, as well as principle. We weren't going to fight another... We didn't feel like fighting another war. We just got ourselves established again in Civvy Street.
Would you have been called up?
I would have been, because this is a peculiar thing, that although I had finished my time, I've got a long service medal from the territorials, as well as the... BEMs and whatnot that I've got. I had a long service, and our time expired. I was no longer on the Z reserve. And yet, in 55, I was called up. I was actually called up in 55.
What for?
For to go and do me a Z reserve service. I don't know if you've ever heard of a Z reserve. Well, as you came out the services, people that still had a certain amount of time to do, I was still a territorial, I'd been a territorial, you see, and according to them, I still had a certain amount of time to do. But I hadn't, because I had my long service medal. I'd finished my time. My time was expired. But somehow, my name was still in the books. And I got this message, and actually I was working for myself, jobbing gardening, when this message came and told me that I had a report at such and such a place, North Wales, for my Azeds reserve service.
And what was it?
It was, well, we went down and reported, issued with our uniforms and medal ribbons and all the satin that they put on. We had been in the First World War.
And it was the Second World War.
The Second World War. we had been in the Second World War, so we could actually show medals and whatnot. And on the ribbons here, that's the first thing they ask you, what ribbons have you got? And they dished them out to you. They couldn't dish me a BAM, they didn't have a BAM ribbon there. But they dished me the other ribbons that I was entitled to, the long service.
Were you in as a sergeant?
I was in as a sergeant, called up as a sergeant. And we went down, we reported this firing camp, Towan, a place called Towan in North Wales. And we went down to Towan and reported. And the sergeant major called us all into the room, and it was a big camp, a very big camp. And he called us into this big room, sit down, we have a major coming along to have a talk to you. And the major came in and told us that we'd been called up at the finish of our, the end of our Z service, our Z service, and we were going to be brought up to date with the new type of guns that they had. This was the idea. It was all new equipment that they had, and we were going to be brought up to date with the guns, and we'd be there for a month, you see. It was a month we were there. And I went down to the gun park, had a look at the guns, same sort of guns, but I had at Hayes Common, electrically, straight from GL and such like. So I went back there. Sergeant Major, he says, we're not putting you up. He had told us, after the Major spoke to us, the Sergeant Major came to us and says, we're not putting new people on the guns because you won't understand them. It's new, it's all new material. But what you'll do is you'll run the camp as you'd run an ordinary camp during the war, you see. Orderly Sergeant, and Sergeant Gray that was with me, he was a theatrical, and he got a job of fixing up the theatrical turns, going down to the town. Going down to town and fixing up for turns to come into camp and give shows and such like. That was his job. And they came and told me that I would be orderly sergeant. I says, not on your life, I'm not. I says, I'm not going to be orderly sergeant. I says, the job I didn't like when I was during the war. I says, I done as little as possible of the orderly sergeant during the war, so I'm not going to do it here. I says, I'm going under guns. He says, you don't know our guns. I says, don't know them. I says, I was on them for years. I says, from the very first one, I says, the first GL set I saw that was on the site, I said, we put up the mattress for it. I says, and from then on, I said, we had that type of gun all the time. So he says, right, he says, you can go down to the gun park tomorrow. He says, we'll see if you're capable of handling gun crew. After the time that you've been out, went down, I knew the gun drill straight away, immediately got cracking, let him say that I was proficient on the gun. And I was on the gun all the time. I was there for the full month. I was on the equipment.
So whole month's training then?
Whole month's training.
Did you resent it?
I didn't. It was a holiday for me. I'd been working hard since I'd came out the service.
But you were getting on then, weren't you? How old were you in 55?
In 55, 45. I was 45 years old. I was past the age, actually, for the Z as well, 45. And I was past the age. No, I was... Age made no difference to me because actually I was a harrier. I was running long distance races and whatnot. Even at the age of 65, I actually run the Morpeth race three times, 3 years. I run it at 60, 61 and 62. At 65, 66 and 67, I run the Morpeth race. I've got cups in there that I got for the Morpeth race when I was 65 years old.
So it was this experience in 55 when you got called up for Zed that made you realise that you were quite likely to get called up.
Well,
the year later.
What I was happy about was that it proved to me. You see, there were all youngsters that were being called up. There were territorials that were being called up for training. And it proved to me that I was still in a position to order these people and direct them around and show them their jobs. I knew more after all the time I'd been out. I still knew more than what these territorials knew about these so-called new guns because they'd never been on them. They'd been taught on mobiles.
But the thing was that it also meant you were liable to be called up for sewers and things. That's what you were saying.
The thing is that it meant, I don't know why, but it still meant to me that they had my name in the army records as a person who could be called up. Why should I? There was no need for it because I was past the age. I was past the service time. I had my long service medal.
So how did the sewers thing resolve itself in Newcastle? I mean, It didn't last long, the crisis, did it?
The crisis didn't last long because they didn't get the opportunity, because the upsurge, I think, was really the ex-servicemen that protest, the protests from all over the country. The politicians had to sit up and take notice. The politicians had to take notice. And it was the Labour Party that actually brought it to an end. If it hadn't been for the opposition opposition to Eden in Parliament, you see, he was forced out through the Suez and Macmillan took over, but that would never have happened if it hadn't been for the Labour Party.
Now, a couple more issues that were bubbling under. I mean, nuclear weapons. When did you... I mean, I know you're a member of CND, but when did you first become aware of the threat of nuclear weapons? Because it had been around since 45.
We'd been arguing. They'd been around since 45. Actually, the two that were dropped in Japan weren't the first two. There was one dropped before that on a test area. There was one dropped on a test area in America, and we'd heard about this one. And then the two that were dropped on Japan, we very much objected to it.
At the time?
At the time, we objected to it, because we had been told that the Japanese war wasn't last because they were on the last legs and they were already asking for surrender. We had been told that the Japanese were asking for surrender, and yet they went and dropped the bombs. There was no need for the second bomb. There may have been for the first bomb. It may have made their minds up quicker, the first bomb, but there was no need for the second bomb. There was no necessity for the second bomb. As I say, I turned anti-American through this sort of thing, through the Lease Land and the bombs on Japan. And so
what about the British bomb? Did you oppose that right from the start?
Right from the start.
What made you oppose?
I was very, very annoyed when the Labour government decided. I opposed it because of the tremendous cost in a country that was bankrupt. We were actually bankrupt when the war finished.
People, what about the moral side of it?
The moral side was, the moral side was definitely there from when they dropped the first one. When they first dropped the first one in Japan, and we saw the capacity for killing the civilians. It was no longer a war weapon. It wasn't a war weapon. There's none of the weapons that we use now are war weapons. If you want a war should be between the armies of the countries that are going to war. A war should never be against civilians. And you see, the weapons that they were making for war now were civilian weapons.
But did you think that just after the, you know, in the years after the Second World War?
In the years, no, I had, this had came to me very, very strongly during the two blitzes that we had. We had two blitzes during the war. We had the big blitz and we had the little blitz.
So you saw the atomic bomb right from the start as being the same as the blitzes, the same, but worse.
That's worse than what we'd been through. We'd been through two blitzes, and they were nothing to what an atomic bomb would be. But
did you oppose, I mean, America had them. Did you oppose Britain having one?
We didn't want Britain to have one. We what they call it. I was against America having them, against Russia having them, and I didn't want us to have them. We didn't have one at the start of the war, after the war. We didn't have it. We didn't have the means. America started, had taken all the atomic developments and such like from this country on the Lease Land Agreement. America had the bomb, and they also had an agreement with us that we wouldn't... that we wouldn't, what they call it, be able to take part in their research.
Did you campaign against the nuclear weapons
very, very
in
much
the 50s?
In the 50s, I was campaigning. We were campaigning all the time.
The Labour Party? The
Labour Party. And other, you see, I joined the... When it formed in the 60s, the CID, CND, and I formed them. But we started anti-war protests. We realised that there couldn't be any such thing as a war with nuclear weapons. The entire nation was going to be at risk. The whole of the world was going to be at risk with nuclear energy. And another thing, we objected to a Labour government spending the money that it was going to cost, because they're not cheap.
In the 40s?
In the 40s.
I mean, after
the war.
Attlee's
government. We objected to Attlee's government. And we used to write to the various MP and such like, and tell them straight that we were against this idea of wasting millions of pounds when we were actually having to get coupons for clothes and coupons for food. You were actually living a life where you had to have coupons for this and coupons for that, and yet they were spending millions on atomic research.